Welcome to the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey Podcast.
I'm Talia Franks, media critic, fanfic enthusiast, and I'll take any gossip you have.
And I'm Lucia Kelly, expert at applied analysis, and I won't be told. It's a defining trait.
And we're here today for a Wibbly Wobbly minisode.
Today we're talking about Flux, Chapter 5, Survivors of the Flux, which aired on the 28th of November, 2021. It was written by Chris Chibnall and directed by Azure Saleem.
Reminder that time isn't a straight line. It can twist in any shape. And as such, this is a fully spoiled podcast. We might bring things in from later in the show, the comics, the books, the audio dramas, or even fan theories and articles.
With that out of the way, that huge monolith doesn't look foreboding at all. So let's get in the TARDIS.
Content warning for this episode, we're going to do a deep dive into abuse and the cycles of gaslighting, and just want you to be aware, keep yourself safe before we dive into talking about that. IMDb synopsis says, as the forces of evil mass, the Doctor, Yaz, and Dan face perilous journeys and seemingly insurmountable obstacles in their quest for survival.
Our synopsis is that this episode is so jam-packed with story threads, they are as tangled and messy as Talia's sleep schedule. I thought we'd seen the worst of the structure issues with Once Upon Time, but at least with Once Upon Time, I was like, the vignettes worked as separate little things. It did not work this episode. It was so messy. It was so all over the place.
Yeah, this episode was a hot mess. Oh my goodness. It was all over the place. I was just like, what is going on here? Because it was just like zip, 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 zip from plot line to plot line from plot line. And I was just getting like whiplash. And I was just like, what is really going on here? Because there's just so much. And I feel like we had so little time with anyone that I didn't fully understand anything.
Yeah. It was also like,
what I did understand is that Yaz is the most competent of anyone. And I feel, and I said this in my Twitter live tweet, which if you've been missing my Twitter live tweets, I live tweet every episode at 8 p.m. Eastern when the BBC America airing goes. So just watch out for that. I'm doing it for all future episodes.
They're very fun. You should definitely read them.
Yeah, but one of the things that I said was that I feel like Yaz is really achieving her final form as a doctor stand-in with her own companions.
Right?
Yeah, because she's got Dan and Jericho now. She's got her own little crew. And she's clearly the most competent of any of them.
Right? I don't feel good about the fact that Jericho was kind of brought back down to this kind of bumbling professor kind of character. Also, just want to flag, where was Peggy? Peggy's gone. They were in charge of a child. I was promised family fix. She was a child in need of therapy and a good family, a good foster family that the universe landed in her lap. And somehow we're like, oh, we can't afford that child actor. Or like, we can't be bothered with that child actor now. I'm sorry, there was a child? Did you forget?
I think it's probably just that they couldn't afford to age her up 3 years.
Do you know what it is? Because that vicar also got sent back. So now she and the vicar are together in the little village. And like, they're going to come. Also, the writing in this episode was like subpar. Like, it was so many repeated lines, so much repeated dialogue. It was so unnecessary.
Yeah, Chibnall, you've done better. Chibnall wrote Broadchurch. He has done better.
Right? Every time I watch an episode like this, which is so chaotic, so messy, so much unnecessary dialogue, the amount of I can't remember whether I heard this in a podcast or read it somewhere as criticism, but ever since I heard it or read it or like consumed it into my brain, I have not been able to stop thinking about it. And it's that Chibnall writes stage directions into his dialogue, and it's so unnecessary. And I'm like, you're so right. So much of the dialogue is stage direction. You don't need, it's a visual medium, my man. Like, you don't need to tell us what we're seeing.
So if we're gonna break it down and follow each episode arc, I think one of the best things about this episode is, again, Yaz getting her own little team. Mm. And I thought that she and Dan and Jericho really had, I feel like I didn't see enough of them. I want that big finish, please. And also Yaz being so cavalier about getting rid of a body.
Right?
And it's, ma'am, how many bodies have you had to get rid of?
She's on a mission because she's been watching that hologram.
Yeah.
Who knows how many times.
Yeah. Oh my God. And I did like Dan and how he was like, why do I have to be the stowaway? The thing about Dan is, like, I don't dislike him. I dislike what he represents. And I don't think it's unreasonable for people to dislike Dan on principle. Like, I don't begrudge people for standing by their principles and disliking the fact that there's yet another white man on the TARDIS. It makes sense to me to dislike the fact that we constantly always have to be having a white man centered. For example, even in a lot of the promotional pictures that I've seen of their little team, you see like either Dan at the forefront or Jericho at the forefront. When, like I said, Yaz is the most competent. Yaz is the one who's actually leading things. And yet, although I do really love that, like, promotional image that I've seen and that we use on our cover for this episode of Yaz with the
MacGuffin, the little clay pot.
Yeah, although I will say there's a little error in one of the promotional images where you can see a crew person with a walkie-talkie, which is very hilarious. And also, I forget if that person is actually visible in the episode, but definitely visible in one of the promotional images. And also, there are lit candles in that place that they go into, which means someone was there recently enough to light candles that are still burning.
Right.
Yes, I know they were going for an aesthetic, but someone was there recently enough to light candles. And also when they like are in Constantinople, who was like that like old woman that they were shuffling out when there was the dynamite? I'm just like, anyway, I just have a lot of questions about who is aiding them on all these tasks. Where are they getting all their money? Also, why is no one raising the question that Yaz is a woman of color in the 1900s, like in the 19 odds? What is that year? What is that decade called?
It's one plus. Oh, like that whole, I don't know, pre-war. But yeah, I have such a mixed up feeling about the discount Indiana Jones adventures part of the of the episodes, because the colonialism and exoticism of the beast, though, it made me so uncomfortable. And just, there was a lot of the mysticism of the East, and like, do not get me wrong, I adored the guru, and I think that was an excellent reversal of tropes, especially given so much of that section of the episode was steeped in those same tropes. But there was just so much of it that left me uncomfy. That I was just like, ugh.
Yes, but I am very glad that modern Doctor Who acknowledged Mexico.
Yeah. Honestly.
Mexico is a place. Look, South America. Although actually, Mexico is technically North America. Mm. Something that a lot of people don't acknowledge. Mexico is in North America. North America is Canada, the United States, Mexico. A lot of people don't want to acknowledge, but Mexico is North America. There's North America, Central America, South America. Mexico is North America. Just also, it's all one continent. It's connected. Well, actually, no, the Panama Canal divides it a little bit, but it was all one continent. There's like,
yeah, no, humans did that. It's not meant to be that.
It's like the Americas is all one continent. Like dividing North America, Central America, South America is artificial. But if you want to divide it, Mexico is in North America. Just so you know. Just so all you people who like don't pay attention to geography know, or don't want to pay attention to geography know, Mexico is in North America. Sorry, I needed to get on my little soapbox, my little geography soapbox.
Yeah, I feel like that covers all of it. Like I loved it. It was very fun seeing them all in period costume and going to all these different places. But also again, just the writing of explaining the exposition in this episode, it was particularly bad in that section. We have to do this in order to do this. This is the first time we're talking about this on the way up the mountain. Clearly, no, we're not. No, you're not.
You've been together for 3 years. You've talked about a lot of things in those 3 years.
Including, I'm sorry, but if Dan is not convinced, given the limited time he has had with the doctor, the speed run this man is having as a companion. I mean, Jericho and Dan have got to assume that the doctor and Yaz are dating, right? Because the way that Dan came in, like clearly he knew exactly what Yaz has been doing. Clearly this is a habit that she's formed. Jericho exults. Quick smart. He's like, I'm a 1960s man. I'm not all about that yet. Dan sits down with Yaz and is, I'm sorry, that is two friends and one of them is helping the other with all of that love stuff. That was a friend comforting someone through a romantic relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That shit was coded all the way through.
Yep.
And the message, the way that they finish each other's sentences. They know each other.
Yeah, I think a lot of the reason I have now grown to appreciate Dan as a character, even though I dislike him as a concept, is because he and Yaz now have that bond and connection from knowing each other for 3 years. Because that's definitely a genuine friendship right there. And I was saying at the beginning of this flux journey that we're on, that in my headcanon, I no longer thought of Yaz as being 19, but Yaz is genuinely no longer 19.
Because, we love that.
Because she traveled with the doctor. So if you add it all up, she and Graham and Ryan traveled with the doctor for, I'm guessing, like 6 months to a year. So like she was 20. Then the doctor left them on Earth for 10 months. So she was like probably 21 at that point. And then she and the doctor traveled together alone.
For an indeterminate amount of time. We don't know. That's our time. We can choose exactly how long that is.
But it was long enough for Yaz to learn how to pilot the TARDIS. Long enough for Yaz to decide to quit her job. I'm guessing at least another year. So I'm guessing at the beginning of Flux, Yaz was at least 22, if not 23. Now it's been an additional 3 years. Yaz is, I'm ballparking, 25, 26 at this point. So like it is now canonical that Yaz is mid to late 20s.
I love that we've moved the doctor's love interest up a decade. That's progress, I feel like. We're out of the teenage years, finally.
I mean, technically, I don't ship the doctor and Martha, but if we had, Martha was like, I think, mid-20s, at least. Mm. Or at least, I think she was like like early mid 20s.
We were never meant to ship Martha. We were never meant to ship
Martha in 10. But if we had, like,
never mind that if 10 had actually given her a chance, they could have been a match. Like, I can see it. I can see the vision. I can see what Martha was seeing. It could have worked. 10 was just being too much of a little bitch baby. Like,
10 is such a little bitch baby, honestly. I don't like 10. I can't wait until the main season is done with 10. 10 is my least favorite doctor. I'm sorry. I know that's controversial.
It's okay. We all know how much you love David Tennant, so it evens out.
Love David Tennant. I do love David Tennant.
All right. We are off topic. Let's move on to the next story. Do you want to tackle Tech Dayun? Or, oh, also, wait, before we move on from Misadventures in Mesopotamia, I do want to very briefly say I'm so happy that Mr. Liverpool finally has someone to talk to and doesn't, he has someone who, like, he trusts to not consider him crazy.
Oh my God. But, like, yeah, but also another moment of connection with Dan and Yez. Where she was like, oh my God, you're from Liverpool? I never noticed. That was definitely two friends teasing each other about, like, I could definitely, it was definitely like the same vibe as like someone saying to me, like, oh, Talia, you like Doctor Who? I never knew. Like, definitely the same vibe.
I do mean to inform everyone, this does mean, I'm talking to all the script writers of Big Finish here, there needs to be at least one Liverpool joke in every single production of that Adventure Time. At least one, between 1 and 3. It's a requirement now, I'm sorry. All other scripts will be rejected.
Yeah, I cannot wait for this Big Finish to happen. Like, it either needs to be a Big Finish or a book. Ideally both.
Yep.
So just to quickly talk about Belle and Covenista and Vinder and Di. When Belle and Vinder barely missed each other.
I nearly threw something at the TV. Chibnall, how could you? That's just hyperdrive. Someone needed to get out of here in a hurry. Sir.
I could not. Also, when Vinder got snatched up in Passenger, I was so mad that I tried to write fuck you, Chris Chibnall, but I accidentally wrote fuck you, Chris Chipotle.
I'm somewhat comforted by the fact that it did seem that that was his plan. That did seem like he did want to get in the Passenger in order to kind of figure it out. But I was like, so not only do they miss each other by inches, you are now putting Vinder in the Passenger?
Yeah, I do like that it means that Vinder and Di are interacting, which means that Di is going to have a bigger part, because I was very worried. And this is something that they were talking about on Queer Archive, and I feel like I cite them all the time, that
it's just free advertising because they deserve it, because every single one of our listeners, if you are listening to us, you should be listening to Queer Archives.
Yeah, but they were talking about how if Di only exists to be someone who is a victim and is just like basically bait and only exists as someone to fight for, then that's not good representation.
Mm-mm. Doesn't look like it though. Di was ready to throw down. I'm so ready.
Also, she was like, I'm from Liverpool.
That's how you know she and Dan are meant to be together. They can't shut up about Liverpool.
Yeah. And I feel like the other thing that I really appreciate about the Belle and Vinder storyline is how it's now starting to like intertwine again with Covenista getting together. I really wish that I'd seen more of their fight. because Belle fighting people, but I feel like one of them was going to end up dead if they'd ended up, if they'd fought for much longer, and it would have been Cavanista. And I do, and I do like the doggo, so I would have been sad because that's the other love of Dan's life.
Oh God, don't remind.
Yeah, I'm saying even if you don't ship Dan Vanista, you have to know that they have a connection. I'm sorry, but I don't want anything bad to happen to Cavanista. He's great. God, the Centaurians are back. I do not care for these potato heads. Like, why? They keep turning up like a bad penny. I don't want them.
Well, it was everyone was turning up. We've got Ood, we've got the Daleks and Cybermen back next week. There was another creature, I believe, in the next time, but I can't remember who it was exactly. Someone.
And the Grand Serpent is back. And I
know
for him. Also, the fact that UNIT had 13 TARDIS in the basement the whole time that 3 was trying to fix his top.
Oh, that's golden. Oh, that's golden. I want fix. I want there were a lot of really cute little flyby references to Classic Who during that whole bit, which I adored and appreciated. But oh my gosh, that would be so funny. Can you imagine? Can you imagine 3 finding 13's TARDIS and being like,
the fuck?
The fuck? I know this ain't mine. I know this is not mine.
It's not my one. Also, where are all the other doctors during this? This feels like it should be a multi-doctor story. But also, the other thing that was striking me about this episode and that stood out to me is Kate is back. And the thing I love about Kate being back is that it explains why UNIT disappeared. Because in the 2019 resolution New Year special, 13 goes looking for UNIT to help out with this Dalek situation. And UNIT is completely gone. It's disappeared. She can't find it. So, but it makes sense because in 2017, the Grand Serpent dissolves UNIT. Obviously, he doesn't truly dissolve it because he's able to use UNIT resources to help the Centaurians, but he makes it go so underground and he takes it over. So Kate goes dark. I'm assuming that Osgood also goes dark later. So
nice to get a mention of her. Hopefully we'll see her next episode.
Yeah, I'm hopeful we'll see her next episode or see both of them. Just wait until we get to the Zygon episode. I fucking hate that episode. I have someone in mind for who would be a good guest, but I don't want to make them watch it again. Anyway, the Zygon episode. Fucking don't get me started. Anyway, the point is, I'm glad Kate's back. I'm glad that it explains why UNIT was gone in 2019 and also why Kate is disappeared in 13's era. I liked the little nod at the like 1970s versus 1980s UNIT dating controversy of how apparently the Grand Serpent was like messing with the records and that's why it doesn't make sense. But anyway, moving along, we haven't even gotten to the Doctor's arc,
right?
Doctor Who.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Okay, so Tech Dayun, classic textbook abusive parent. Like, that is exact. Oh, it made me so mad.
Yeah,
did it perfectly, but like in a way that, like, I hate it, but because they did it so well.
Yeah, when Tech Dayun and the Doctor were having that throwdown argument, I was just like, this is everything that I wanted, but it's too short. When the Doctor and Tech Dayun were having that fight and the doctor was like, you had no right to do this to me.
Just all the bullshit of it, right? Never mind everyone's pet theory that Belle and Vinda probably just left her there for 5 minutes so that they could go get some snacks, but like...
So doctor says, you took something that didn't belong to you. Titanian says, I rescued you. Would you prefer to have been left? The doctor says, you assumed, you don't know. Like, you denied me my life. And Tectaeon is like, I gave you life, but you think you could have been something else, someone else. And the doctor is like, maybe, I'll never know. And like, it's like...
Jodie Whittaker's face when she delivered that line.
It's just... Uh-huh. Tectaeon is being like... She's being like classic gaslighting, horrible, like it's masterful, honestly, because so Tectaeon genuinely believes that she's doing what's best, and the doctor is the way that the doctor is so devastated and like yearning for this life that she never had is, and just for the possibilities that she was denied, is just, it's honestly heartbreaking. And I feel like this is what the River storyline could have been, but so much better, because it's child being denied their family and denied their birthright and like being taken, but actually done well.
And that is what comes from writing from character rather than writing from mystery, right? Like, when, yes, the writing in this episode was a mess, not that part though. And because that's where Chibnall shines, right? When you're doing deep character work, particularly trauma-based character work, he knows what he's about. And so the River was always only ever seen as a mystery, as an object, as this shiny little toy for the Doctor and for Moffat, can I just say, as well. Like, she was never given the space to actually make sense in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Chibnall writing this doctor as this person who, like, and just the way that this parallels to so many real life patterns in abuse, even down to memory loss, right? Like, one of the first things that a lot of people in emotionally traumatic circumstances report is memory loss. And the fact that they've worked that in as a sci-fi thing is just top tier. But I also really adore how Chibnall writes Tectaeon, because it so often abusers are seen as actively malicious, or like they're doing it on purpose or sadistic in some way. It makes more sense narratively, and it makes more sense to our human brain to make some sort of sense out of the chaos in a way that like makes narrative sense. But it doesn't leave space for the thousands of abuse stories which people live through every day, which is where the abuser doesn't know that they're an abuser. So often people do not realize the impact that they have on others and or what they're doing. And the fact that Tectaeon is written from that perspective, and especially written kind of quite literally one step away from reality, right? Like, she's grown so in love with this idea and this concept of the division that it's just completely warped her sense of reality to the point where she doesn't see what she's doing as morally reprehensible and actually sees morality as a flaw is just chef's kiss. Excellent. I love everything that's happening here.
Yeah, and also it's a white woman doing this. Like, it's embodying the white savior stereotype, particularly when we think about the fact that the primary division doctor that we see is a Black woman, because even though Jodie Whittaker is also white, if you go back to the Timeless Children episode, you will see that all of the children that Tech Teyun experimented on, I think almost all of them were children of color. Like,
The original child at the wormhole was also a child of color.
Yeah, she was a little Black girl. And I'm not sure how intentional it was. I'm not sure how many people are going to get that, but I think it makes it a lot more prevalent. I also I love the Timeless Children arc in general. I know so many people who hate it, and I find it so interesting and not at all surprising that the fact that so many people hate it, because one of the things that I saw on Twitter was someone was so upset by the Timeless Children arc. It's actually really funny because the phrasing made it sound like Chris Chibnall was born and raised on Gallifrey. But what they were trying to say was the doctor was born and raised on Gallifrey. I was like, Chris Chibnall was born on Gallifrey? A bunch of people on Twitter are making fun of it. But basically, the point is people, and it wasn't just this one person, I've seen other people upset about this too, that people are very upset that the doctor, even though the doctor was still raised on Gallifrey, the doctor's memories, because they still don't have their memories back, are still of being a Time Lord, are still of being Gallifreyan. Like, culturally, that's what the doctor is. But people are upset that the doctor is now an immigrant, that the doctor is no longer, and so people are very upset that the doctor is no longer a white man belonging to this like prestigious institution. And I just think people should just sit with that for a moment. Just sit with the fact that they are not comfortable with the fact that the doctor is no longer someone who comes from, because previously the doctor was a white man who came from a place of privilege that went to a bunch of places and saved people all the time. So previously the doctor was very much that sort of white savior stereotype. Like, that is, previously the doctor could be interpreted as that. The doctor was like a godlike figure. That was the doctor. And that's the doctor that a lot of people love. But now the doctor is no longer that. The doctor instead has been put in the position of being marginalized, of being the person who is no longer centered, and they don't like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I also think it's very interesting because another criticism that I've seen is, which is like tangential but related, is that people are saying because the Fugitive Doctor, and I think we can assume now the Fugitive Doctor fits in before the First Doctor, like everything from the First Doctor onwards seems to be post-division, is that, and because the Fugitive Doctor is characterized as this very take charge firecracker, that this idea of undoing character development, because the First Doctor is notoriously cold and calculated and learns to love humanity through his granddaughter and his companions. And people were arguing, like, if the Fugitive Doctor is already this firecracker, and then you remove the Doctor's memories, and then they go to this cold, calculated figure, and then the end goal is back to the firecracker, then that's not a narrative arc, which makes no sense to me, because again, we are talking about learning to process and live and grow and heal from having abuse and trauma in your past. One of like the key things in that is the fact that healing is not progressive, and that you will revert back to initial spaces where you felt safe or in control, which for the doctor would be akin to the personality that was safe with Tech Teyun, right? which would be this same cold, calculated person. So the fact that, like, you vacillate between these two arcs and eventually end up with Firecracker, which seems to be where the Doctor lives naturally without that abusive influence, is like, that's exactly how you should write it. And it frustrates me that people don't see that.
Yeah, and it honestly makes a lot of sense for the Doctor to progress like that, because that's what healing often looks like, is, like you said, vacillating from one place to another. It's often cyclical. And also, the Doctor had all their memories removed. So they basically had all of that character work undone, and they had to relearn it. Like, it's very much like what happened to Donna. She lost all of her memories and then lost all of her character growth and then had to relearn all of that. It's, if you want to go back to the OG person that so many people love, RTD, when he removed all of Donna's memories and Wilf goes, she was so much better with you. So she had all that character growth that got unlearned, and now she would have to relearn how to be that person. So yeah, the Doctor learned how to be like a firecracker person, like you were saying, but they reverted, and then it took them so many regenerations to become that, to become that person again. So the same.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that the Doctor continuously moves slowly but surely towards their true self is proof of the strength of character, right? It's about, and also when I say safe, I mean that quite literally. It's not about whether that the shell that you create is actually good or healthy for you. It's what will cause me the least amount of pain, mm-hmm. right? What will not hurt me? So, which is why a common response to abuse is to isolate yourself, literally, figuratively, emotionally, to just remove yourself from that pain, which again is something that which is a consistent character trait throughout all Doctors, right? Like, it's just, This is entirely up my alley. I could talk about it for hours, but we won't because we're running out of time.
So to circle back to the actual episode, because we just spent a lot of time talking about the things unrelated to the episode. How was the actual episode? Was it fabulous, funky, or foul? What do we think of the actual episode? Not just the individual pieces. Because I feel like the individual pieces of the episode were good. I liked the individual pieces. But the episode itself was kind of a mess.
I would put this again firmly in the funky category, which upsets me deeply. But like, it's such a mix of good and the bad. There's no, if we could just, it feels very much like three episodes that don't quite mesh, that were just thrown all together. If we could have one whole episode of Adventures in Mesopotamia, if we could have one whole episode of, I'm going to start calling them the Misfit Crew because everyone's scattered all over the place. So that's Belle, Vinda, Carvanista, Di, they're the Misfit Crew. We could have one episode of Misfit Crew, would adore that. If we could have one episode of just diving deep into the Doctor's backstory, I would adore that. But like all of them together, it's like making a cake with like caramel and cheese. What are you doing? There's too much going on here.
Yeah. Also, we didn't even get to Azarin Swarm, but we don't have time for that.
You'll just have to wait 5 years and then we'll go in depth again.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey podcast.
We hope you enjoyed this adventure with us through space and time.
You can find us elsewhere on the internet, on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram at WibblyPod. Follow us for more Wibbly Wobbly content.
You can find out more information about us and our content on wibblywobblytimeywimey.net and full transcripts for episodes at wibblywobblytimeywimey.net/transcripts.
If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can send us an email at wibblywobblytimeywimeypod@gmail.com.
Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and other platforms, as it helps other people find us and our content.
That's all for now. Catch you in the time vortex.